This is Central Time. Last month, two banks failed pretty much back-to-back. First, Silicon Valley Bank on the 10th, and then Signature Bank 2 days later. That was March 12th. The collapse of those banks has sparked a new debate among lawmakers about bank regulation, how to prevent more failures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there steps you want to see the government take to regulate banks? Do you think banks should be bailed out or otherwise assisted by the federal government when they do fail? Do you worry about banks being too big to fail? How about those middle-sized banks that may fall through the cracks? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Brian Gendreau is a clinical professor of finance at the University of Florida Warrington College of Business. Previously, he worked as an economist at the Federal Reserve. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Can you give us sort of the brief nutshell version of what's happened with these two banks? They're not household names here in Wisconsin, but fairly large banks, Silicon Valley and Signature Bank. What happened?
Well, basically, interest rates went up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And interest rates have been low for a long time. And then the pandemic came along. People weren't buying much in the way of services. And they couldn't go to the mall because the malls were closed. So their savings went up and deposits went up in a lot of banks. And banks struggled, particularly mid-sized banks, to invest them. And in the case of one of the mid-sized banks that failed, Silicon Valley Bank, they bought massive quantities of medium and long-term treasury securities at low rates of interest. Well, in the fight, Fed hiked interest rates and bond prices go down when interest rates go up. And a lot of depositors, you know, looked and said, look, I'm getting, you know, the average rate on a one-year CD today is about 1.5%. They said, I can get over 4% risk-free if I buy treasury bills. And so they did. They withdraw their deposits, and the banks had to sell securities at a loss of deposits, and it just the numbers didn't add up, and they had to be rescued by the Federal Reserve and the FDIC.
Now, the worry about when a decent-sized bank goes under is a contagion. Is this? Are there going to be more banks in the same position, or is there some sort of relationship between Bank A and Bank B that's going to drag Bank B down? We see First Republic Bank now still in a shaky situation. How worried are you about this spreading and maybe taking down a wider number of banks?
Well, initially, first of all, I would say that some of these banks weren't mid-sized banks, but Silicon Valley Bank had reportedly $210 billion in assets. It really wasn't all that small a bank.
Right.
But be as it may, there was contagion initially. Deposits at a lot of other mid-sized banks fled those banks. And then the regulators stepped up with liquidity assistance. And, of course, we saw a number of banks who band together under J.P. Morgan's leadership and provided money to one of the troubled banks, First Republic. And things have stabilized since then. The problem with banks is you never really know what's on their balance sheet. You know, there's a sort of an asymmetry of information there. And so they're very reliant on trust. And that can be a fragile thing, but it looks for the time being that it's been restored.
You wrote a piece on The Conversation. This is what led us to call you in particular, looking at kind of five different types of policies that would be intended, at least, at making bank failures less likely, less severe. And one of them is giving a little more federal attention and regulatory attention to this category of bank. Not the very biggest of the big, but these mid-sized banks that, you know, don't maybe get as much direct supervision. What kind of options are there? How effective do you think they might be?
Yeah, a little background on that is, there's always calls for more supervision regulation after a banking crisis. And after the global financial crisis in 2010, Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act that allowed for stricter regulation on banks that had assets that were greater than $50 billion. And those were deemed systemically important banks. Well, in 2018, Congress passed another law that kind of rolled back regulations on banks that they basically raised that limit for what constitutes a systematically important bank to $250 billion, which meant that a lot of mid-sized banks were subject to more relaxed restrictions, not the more stringent stress tests that the larger banks were subject to. So there are already calls for that legislation, the 2018 legislation, to be repealed. and to restore that $50 billion threshold. So a lot of what are now considered mid-sized banks would be subject to stress tests and higher capital requirements and liquidity requirements.
Would that kind of regulation have caught that risk, as you said, of that heavy investment in bonds that went south when interest rates rose? Is that something we might have gotten an earlier warning with this more up-close regulation of these mid-sized banks?
Yes, I think we would have. I think that should have shown up in the stress test. Now, whether regulators could have responded to that, you know, Silicon Valley Bank reportedly was asked about six times by its regulators to address its problems, and they didn't. Maybe they at that point couldn't.
We're talking about bank regulation with Brian Gendreau, clinical professor of finance at the University of Florida. After a couple of decent-sized banks went down last month, you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, with what you'd like to see from the federal government when it comes to regulating banks. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Brian Gendreau is a clinical professor of finance at the University of Florida's Warrington College of Business. We're talking to him about bank regulation after back-to-back failures of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank last month. You can join in with your thoughts, what you'd like to see change, if anything, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. Or what your guest thinks of it. I've read that there are something like a couple hundred banks of similar size that are in the same trouble as those that are failing now. And I think this situation is going to be exaggerated, especially as the commercial real estate and the residential real estate follow suit with price downturns, the price of what the banks hold their assets are going down and they're offsides. And it seems like the laws and regulations don't mean anything anymore when they bailed out the Silicon Valley Bank and made whole the people with more than $250,000 in their account. Whether they can do that across the board or not.
Gotcha. Jim, thanks. You packed it a lot there that we can talk about, Jim. Thanks for the call. Brian, first of all, the thought that there might be a large number of banks in roughly similar risky situations, whether it's because of interest rates making their bond holdings less valuable, or as Jim says, certain types of real estate they may be heavily invested in. Do you have wider spread worries that there may be a lot of banks at risk?
I wouldn't say worries, and I don't really know what the condition is of 200 banks that may or may not be at risk without going through their books myself with a fine-tooth comb. But it's a problem generally. I mean, interest rates went up unexpectedly, and a lot of banks were left holding low interest rate assets. And I've noticed here where I live in Florida, there are banks who are offering 4% on new one-year deposits, except it's for new money only, because they can't offer that to all their depositors because they don't have the earnings to support it. And it's just, you know, does that constitute a crisis? I don't think so. I think it's just going to take a while for the banking system to adjust to the higher interest rates.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And Brian, Jim also brings up something you wrote about in that piece in The Conversation, the idea that, okay, the FDIC insures depositors' money up to X amount. Well, what happens when the deposits are more than X amount? What is the state of the art if some of those deposits are covered? How do those decisions get made? Are there calls to raise that number?
There are calls to raise that number. I know Maxine Waters, who's the ranking Democrat on the House Financial Services Committee, has said she supports raising the limits, and she's throwing out numbers in the millions, or at least questioning that appropriate limit was in the millions. The problem with providing for broader insurance coverage, and the current limit is $250,000 insured per account in each bank. The problem with broadening the limit is that it erodes market discipline. I mean, currently, at least theoretically, the regulators rely on well-informed, sophisticated investors to police the banks. But the problem is that the regulators, the FDIC in particular, have been handling bank resolutions, they're required by law to resolve the bank failure in the lowest cost means possible, and often that means merging into another bank with FDIC assistance. But what people don't realize is since 2008, the FDIC has covered almost all deposits, insured or uninsured, in failed banks. 95% of the 572 banks that failed between 2008 and 2016 had all of the deposits covered, regardless of insurance status. And this has raised some concerns whether this, you know, there's always a trade-off between market discipline and, you know, stability of the banking system. We could insure all deposits and the banking system would be perfectly stable, we think, except during the thrift crisis when many savings and loans failed back in the 1980s, they were funded entirely with insured deposits. So there were other circumstances there. But there is that trade-off. And, you know, there have been a number of analysts and theorists who are looking into ways to get to exploit that trade-off in a maybe more sensible manner.
I want to check out one more category of changes you look at, including a bipartisan bill in the Senate that would require regulators to claw back compensation to bank executives in some circumstances. Can you talk about that and the impact it might have?
Yeah, well, that's just a form of market discipline. Here, it's not wouldn't be, say, large uninsured depositors or bondholders would be called upon to exert the discipline of the banks. Here, it would be the bank executives themselves. The idea would be that when a bank fails and the executive had been paid large bonuses and had not curtailed the risk of the institution, large bonuses that might be clawed back by the regulators as far back as four or 5 years. So it's a way of sort of having the executives put more skin in the game.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Brian, as you mentioned, when there are bank failures, there's a lot of talk about new regulation, new laws. If the bank situation stabilizes, do you think that we won't see a lot of change and we'll just sort of put this in the rearview mirror pretty quickly?
Well, I think we're going to see, we're seeing calls already for stronger supervision, certainly. And there probably will be some new regulations, including lowering the limit for systematically important banks down to $50 billion. But there are a lot of calls out there for wholesale revamping of the banking systems, for example, saying, banks should there should be narrow banks in which all of the deposits can be invested only in cash and treasury bills so that bank could never fail and demand deposits would be perfectly safe. Trouble with that is all of the lending and all of deposits would go off into the shadow banking system, and that was a problem during the 2008-2009 recession. So I don't know that we're going to get wholesale. I think we are going to get some more supervision and tweaking of regulation. I don't think, unless the banking situation gets worse, I don't think we're going to see a wholesale banking reform.
Brian, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Brian Gendreau, a clinical professor of finance at the University of Florida's Business School. He worked previously as an economist at the Federal Reserve. He talked to us about bank regulation policies and practices after a couple of high-profile back-to-back bank collapses last month.